Investing in your professional development is more than just a career move. It's an investment in better patient care. That's where the Wound Care Education Institute comes in. Whether you're looking for training in diabetic wound care, skin and wound management, or ostomy management, WCEI offers flexible course formats to fit your life. Choose from on-demand, live online, or on-site options. Their comprehensive, evidence-based training prepares you for the National Alliance of Wound Care and Ostomy, or ABWM, credentialing exams, boosting your confidence and enhancing your skills. When you expand your expertise, you improve patient outcomes, satisfaction, and healing. Ready to grow? Visit WCEI.net to get started today. That's WCEI.net, your next step towards better care and career growth. Hey, nurses. Welcome to the Nurse Dot Podcast, giving nurses validation, resources, and hope one episode at a time. Today on Nurse Dot Podcast.
There's a MacGyver aspect to our job that I think a lot of us, it's our middle name. You know, I always say to people, we learned everything we need to know about wound care nursing in kindergarten. Can you cut? Can you collar? Can you draw? The opportunity to be autonomous and to be a leader is quite satisfying, especially when you're in home care, where basically you're it. You are the eyes, ears, mouth, nose, everything for the patient.
Joining us today, Lynette Franklin, a registered nurse internationally recognized as an expert in wound, ostomy, and continence care. With experience spanning four countries, Lynette is not only a skilled clinician, but also a passionate educator dedicated to holistic, patient-centered care. As a clinical nurse specialist in adult health, she's making a global impact by sharing her expertise with healthcare professionals and advancing best practices in nursing. I'm your host, Kara Lunsford, registered nurse and VP of Community at nurse.com. Lynette Franklin, I am like so happy you're here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I talked to you a little bit about when we were at Wild on Wounds.
Yeah.
We had a chance to connect there, and I know we talked a little bit about we should do podcast. You should come on the podcast. And when I saw your name on our list, I was like, yes, we did it. We did it. We effectively did it.
Yes. And I'm excited to be here.
Oh, my gosh. Well, as someone who loves to talk about wounds and has been a wound care nurse and has been a hospice and home health nurse and has probably far too many photos in my phone of decubitus ulcers.
Yes.
I'm always telling people, hey, don't swipe through my phone.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So I'm excited to talk about this because I think that, well, we're talking about like consistency in care and how important that is. And whereas I was just having this conversation with someone earlier today where I was like, one of the things I love the most about home health nursing and when I started going and becoming, like I did a mission trip. And what I really loved was learning like tricks of the trade, yeah. Right? There's something very satisfying, I think, about being a nurse and being like, oh, but did you know that you could do this little trick or that little trick and see better results, or it's going to heal so much faster if you use this or use that. And it might seem a little not customary or certainly like not by the book. And that can be really, I don't know how to say it. I guess just like fun and satisfying as a nurse to feel like you're resourceful.
Right. Well, there's a MacGyver aspect to our job that I think a lot of us, it's our middle name. You know, I always say to people, we learned everything we need to know about wound care nursing in kindergarten. You know, can you cut? Can you collar? Can you draw? So all those different things. Can you follow instructions? And I think that's part of the big thing. But the opportunity to be autonomous and to be a leader is quite satisfying. I definitely hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in the home care where you basically, you are it. You are the eyes, ears, mouth, nose, everything for the patient. And if your experience is different than mine, you won't get in touch with a physician for potentially weeks. You know, so you basically need to have some type of system in place that helps over that course.
So that's kind of what I'm always, maybe it's because I'm a Libra, but I'm always trying to like strike this balance, right? Uh-huh. How do you stay consistent, follow certain best practices, right? But right. also have a bit of that autonomy and like how far outside the lines can you color and still be following like a certain standard of practice? Because I think when we're talking about consistency of care, there's this tendency to want to like, okay, well, I have to do this and I have to do this and I have to do this and I have to follow these very specific guidelines. And that can be difficult when you want to use maybe some of your own historical knowledge or if you've been a nurse for 20 years, you're like, yeah, I know, but one time I did this thing and it really worked, you know, and you want to incorporate that. So talk to me a little bit about, well, back up, Kara.
Yeah.
Back up. I need to have you first introduce yourself and just like, just tell the audience really quickly, like who you are and, you know, why we should bother listening to you in the first place.
Well, that's a very good question. I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer that, but hopefully some of my credentials will satisfy people. So my name's Lynette Franklin. I'm a clinical nurse specialist in adult health, and I've been a nurse. I graduated in the 1900s, so I remember actually where we had to pay to do searches for journal articles, which is crazy now because I can do it and get the article without having to go to the stacks and everything. So I became a wound ostomy continence nurse in the early 2000s and had the privilege of working at Medical University of South Carolina under the guidance of Carolyn Cutnow, who's just a trailblazer in terms of practice and in terms of getting it right and in terms of just being a fabulous mentor. So that's who I am. I've done palliative care. I was practicing in the States for 25 years. I'm originally from Canada and actually moved home at the time of COVID, not because of COVID, but so my practice has spanned 4 countries in diverse care settings. I've done home health, and by home health, not as a clinician, as and also in professional practice. I've done hospice, med-surg, and then mainly is nursing as a wound ostomy continence nurse. And specifically, I've ran 2 clinics as an advanced practice nurse in South Carolina and in Georgia. So why should you listen to me? Well,
that's it. I mean, that's why you should listen to you.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's one of the things. How do you stay consistent? So how do you evaluate if somebody's worthy to be listened to?
Yeah, I think that the more that you've been at the bedside and doing the work, mm-hmm. or even been on the receiving end, like as a patient, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you have, you know, much, like if you want to speak a little bit about just your own experience, but I think that that goes a long way too, is like, have you been on both sides of the care, right?
Yes. Well, thankfully, I haven't had chronic wounds. I am a product of spending many a summer without suntan lotion and being a lifeguard. And I've had basal cell carcinoma on my face and had to have Mohs. And actually, I have a Mohs coming up again. And so I'm evaluating, they're telling me to do this, and I'm a wound care nurse, so do I really want to use that particular tape on my face, or do I want to pick up something from the drugstore? And so, am I an expert, or am I a clinician, or am I a patient? And I think coming humbly into the situation and being able to justify what you're doing, but not being a hard head, And I can say, with all honesty, I've had problems listening. And I think you don't necessarily have to throw the baby with the bathwater. It's okay to say, you know, I hear what we're doing here, but let's talk about it this way. And maybe we could get something better. And I think that with that humble approach and looking at things from that lens, sometimes that's helpful. But at the same time, I think it's also important to make sure that we're doing what's safe. Like, there's certain times, like, my students will tell me that I've like, stop, you know, and patients are like, what are they doing? You know, yeah. So it's okay to do that, to stop and reevaluate. And it's also okay to admit I was wrong. I totally goofed this up.
Yeah. One of the things that I usually, for myself, when I'm evaluating whether or not, you know, is this someone I should be listening to, I look to see if somebody, what that level of humility is. Mm-hmm. Am I listening to someone who is saying, you know what, I used to think this, mm-hmm. and I used to practice this way. And yeah. then evidence was what I was looking. I was looking at the evidence, mm-hmm. and that changed my mind. And then yeah. I started practicing differently. Yeah. And for me, it's so important that when you're listening to someone, if it sounds like they have never deviated or never been willing to say, I used to do things this way, but then I realized that that's kind of an old or an antiquated way of doing things. And then I learned something new, or the data didn't support what we used to do, and then we changed. If you're not hearing that, I personally would question that person.
Yeah. I think also how you go about asking, I love that approach, you know, listening to what made them change or whatever. I always like to tell me about, not even asking a question. You know, that's really interesting how you did that. Tell me about it. And a lot of times we'll find out that people, especially patients, will actually put measures in place to make it easier. And they just don't know. You know, our patients aren't going to CINAHL or meds, you know, they're going to Dr. Google. And so when you ask them to tell you about it, sometimes you can actually streamline. I've had a lot of patients who have disabilities or different abilities change the way things are done just because they physically couldn't cut or they physically couldn't reach. And so sometimes those things that aren't impacting the care in terms of healing, it's okay to change. And a lot of those things I've actually used to help other patients and to encourage them yeah. to stay consistent and also allow them the autonomy that they need as promoting their self-care. And so a lot of times, you know, as nurses, as a new nurse, it's really hard to figure that out. Like, where's the give and take? And so it's also important to talk to your mentors. How mm-hmm. would you handle this situation? But at the same time, always trying to improve yourself. As a new grad, I just remember one of my colleagues, when I started out, I was in medicine floor, 33 patients, and it was chaos most of the time. And there was a lot of us. The only person who had experience was a charge nurse. And then the rest of us were all new grads. And my friend Kristen would say, well, last night when I looked it up and I thought, oh my goodness, she's worked a 12-hour shift. She's on her third, but she still looked it up. And I think I have taken that and run with it because we have to be looking at things.
And you know what's so funny is that, and this is not exactly the perfect analogy.
Yeah.
However, I'm going to use it anyway.
Go for it, girl.
I'm going to do it. Yeah. So, you know, when you're in a fine dining, you know, you're in a restaurant mm-hmm. and you have like allergies or you have food restrictions mm-hmm. or things like that. And you see the server trying to memorize 8 people's orders. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. I was like, just write it down. Like, just like, you're not going to get an award for like being able to memorize. I'm not going to tip you more if you memorized everyone's order. We're going to tip you for getting the right order, you know, not getting something that someone's allergic to, you know, like, And it's funny because, like, I think of that a little bit in terms of being like a seasoned nurse. Sometimes we think like, oh, you know, if some young nurse sees me like looking it up in a drug book, what is that going to say? Like, oh, I'm more of a professional, or I'm a seasoned nurse. I don't need to be like looking up drugs. I should know all of these drugs by heart. And it's like, well, no, you shouldn't.
Right.
And it's way more important look it up.
Right. And the thing is, things change. Like the amount of change is so constant. And I don't know how anybody can stay up to date on everything. So it's important to make sure that you have a variety of sources that you're using, that you're evaluating those sources and making sure that you are staying up to date and staying consistent. And I think that sometimes, unfortunately, is when there's inconsistencies that happen is when we actually check. And by that time, it's usually too late.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate saying this, but we have to practice such that if we were sitting on a court of law, that we would sitting in a court of law or on that jury, we'd be able to defend what we've said. And having been deposed and sat for hours on the witness stand, one, it's very scary. And two, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. But at the same time, for the client, I am glad that I had evidence. I'm glad that I was able to back it up.
Right. I think that that's the consistency, right? Like, so I think people think when they think of consistency, right, they think I'm going to do things the way I've always done them and I'm going to keep doing them the same exact way. And that is not the type of consistency that we're talking about. Although it's good to have some level of consistency in that way, but it's more important to be consistent in your dedication to learning and to staying abreast of new ways of caring and providing care.
Yeah.
Because really, at the end of the day, what we want is consistency in outcomes.
Exactly.
Right? And if Kara's over here packing a wound wet to dry because that's how it was done 30 years ago, when actually that got changed from wet to dry to wet to moist, then it went kind of from, I mean, not to say that you don't do wet to moist in certain circumstances, but then there's like negative pressure and then there's like, you know,
a lot of other therapies.
Among other therapies, plenty of different types of therapies and different types of dressings. Like those dressings have evolved and sometimes, and I don't know if you kind of have that experience sometimes with some of the more seasoned wound care nurses who maybe have been doing it for 40 or 50 years, if they're not committing to their professional development and continuing to take classes and continuing to go to conferences and to learn about new supplies and learn about new treatments, and then they can potentially get stuck.
Right.
And then there isn't that consistency, right, for patients in terms of like...
And I think you've just sort of highlighted a whole bunch of issues. When I go in and see a patient, first of all, I ask, what are their goals and what are my goals? And then together, hopefully, we'll be able to get some type of plan put together. So first of all, making sure our goals are correct and that you've written those down someplace, that their goals, what their goals are. Because when you've been looking after a chronic wound, a lot of times patients or clinicians get to a point like nothing's happened, but then you look back and you're like, oh my goodness, the wound area went from this to this. Like it is working. It's slow, but it's working. So that's the first thing. The second thing, in terms of dressings and all those things, that's excellent. You're right. All those things are important, but also, is your goal to do it efficiently and cost? Cost is huge. Like, I have been privileged that I've worked at places that have paid for me to go to conferences and paid my time while away. But if you are in a situation that you can't afford the hotel or you can't afford not getting a paycheck, how do we do that? Like, how do you stay consistent? Or if you've got a patient who has no insurance or they live someplace that they don't get delivery. And so I think it's really important that we ask our goals and then also identify the things that are impeding those goals. And so then as wound care nurses as a whole, we can unite and say, hey, this is what's happening. I want to make sure that I'm consistent with my colleagues. One of the things that Angela Dye at Emory taught me this, and she's brilliant. She's a wound care nurse, and it wasn't necessarily wound care that she was negotiating, but she was negotiating salary. And so what she had done is got the WOCN, that document that looks at how much people are making, their source of income and all that. And then she cross-referenced it to what they were doing and what the averages in their state were. And she went to her institution and said, hey, you know, you're advertising that we're number one in the state and we're number five in the nation, but my pay salary here is in the lowest 25th percentile, but my education is in the top 5 percentile of the country. And so this is not adding up. And when you've got those facts and figures, it makes a big difference. And so I know a lot of times we're, you know, you're taught, don't talk about your salary. Don't talk about what you're getting as a clinician. And you have to honor policy and things like that. But I think that we need to not be afraid to say, hey, I'm only making X amount of dollars a year, but they pay for this, 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 this. And so when you look at that, I'm actually getting just the same.
Yeah.
But also negotiating that and bringing that to the table so that people know where we are.
Yeah, if you lose those people, if you lose people who have that type of experience and education and credentials, and you don't value them accordingly, you end up losing that type of mentorship of other nurses who are there, you know, working within your organization. And then that also affects consistency of care, right? Because when you have turnover and you have new people coming in who maybe don't have the same set of values and professional development and are not maybe staying abreast of current trends and the data and all of that, if you don't value those people and if you don't value yourself enough to ask for what you're worth, then you end up leaving an institution and there's a ripple effect.
Exactly.
To that.
I've worked in institutions where there's no union. I've worked in institutions with a union. I've worked in private. I've worked for non-profit, for profit. And one of the things that I have seen consistently is when the nurse is valued and there seems to be a different approach. Now, at the same time, do they complain? Oh, yeah. Like, is everything, you know, all roses and giggles? No. Like, there is still stuff hitting the fan like every other job. But at the same time, the level of care is quite different. I'm going to use an example that happened here in Canada. Because we're socialized medicine, during the COVID epidemic, nurses who were working for the province, so in hospitals, anything that was not a private institution, were actually, they had a salary freeze. So since then, they've had a lawsuit and the nurses were recouped that price, that money. But in that situation, there hasn't been a raise in salaries that is consistent necessarily with the cost of living increases.
Yeah.
Whereas I worked for a not-for-profit who we had to raise everything. Part of my job was I had to spend X amount of hours fundraising, either supporting the institution or bringing in money. And I was a bedside nurse. But at the same time, I felt so valued because even though I was working for them during COVID, we received a 3% increase each year because the board voted for that. I understand completely that there is different priorities and we might not have the priority to be able to support the latest and the greatest dressing. We can still do it a different way.
Yep.
But at the same time, I think we have creativity and a mind that thinks outside of nursing, how can we get the same thing for the same cost? And so I think that being curious and creative is so important too. But at the same time, and I'm speaking to administrators and I'm speaking to the bedside nurse, I know we're exhausted. I can tell you many times I came home in tears because I just did not have one more ounce to give. But I think we also can use that to our advantage in the end. So
I guess
I'm saying that to give people hope that, you know, it can be terrible, but it can get better and we can influence change.
Yeah, we of course. One of the things that I wanted to highlight that you mentioned briefly is also socialized medicine versus what we have here, that I don't know. Do you think that there's more uniformity in care in socialized medicine?
I haven't looked at those statistics, but I think if we take the U.S. as an example, a lot of people forget that you do have socialized care. It's called Medicaid and Medicare.
That's true.
So then you look at them state level. So I happen to work in two states that did not take the government funding from the federal level. So the amount of money expended to individuals was different for Medicaid than if I had worked for a state that actually did take the federal incentives. I don't know if you remember all that during the mid, I guess it was the noughts, like the early teens. Anyways, but now working for socialized, and each province is different. Our province, we have an organization that does all the home and community resources. So like the occupational therapy, the nursing, all of that. So keeping people in the home, and the province runs that. And it's interesting, since I've been back in Canada for 5 years, the name of that organization has changed twice. The mandate has changed twice. And people are really frustrated because it's this constant turnover. But at the same time, I see that there's actually big changes that are potentially positive for the bedside clinician and the bedside patient, but there's also negatives. So how it works is, like, in the area that you are, there are companies that bid to have the contract to look after people. And up until, so there were 13 districts, and each of those districts had different contracts. So I could go to the Southeast, which is the area I'm in, and I had X amount of wound care supplies. But when I was talking to colleagues in the Northwest, they had a whole different set of wound care supplies. And so we definitely had to talk at a generic level. But at the same time, now we're able to have that buying power of the province. So we can, now that they're all unified in the new Ontario Health at Home, they have lists that are standard across the province. But a lot of people are upset because they've gone with the cheapest and the easiest. And so, and something that's available to everyone. So what does that mean? There's advantages and disadvantages of both systems, and there's always going to be people who potentially fall through the cracks or don't get the care. So how do we make it more equitable? It's not going to be equal for everybody, but what can we do to promote care that is the best in the situation that we're in? I remember hearing people say that from like knee high to a grasshopper. And I'm very idealistic. Well, why can't we do it the right way? And as I get older, I realize that sometimes you just have to do the best with what you have, but the system can change. And so I'm doing the best I can right now, but the goal is to change.
Yeah.
And that can be exhausting, but being a change agent is really important too. And you have to pick your battles so that you're not extended beyond your ability.
Hey, nurses! Are you ready to elevate your nursing career? The Wound Care Education Institute can help you reach your goals with expert training in skin and wound management, diabetic wound care, and ostomy management. WCEI offers the largest selection of wound care learning options, designed to enhance your skills, build your confidence, and prepare you for board certification exams. With flexible formats, on-demand, live online, or on-site, you can choose what fits your schedule. Thousands of nurses have trusted WCEI to take their careers to the next level. Now it's your turn. Save $100 on new certification courses with code SAVE100 at checkout. Visit WCEI.net to explore course options and start your journey today. Offer valid on new purchases only, excludes recertifications and refresher courses. Would you say that, because as I'm listening to you talk and I'm thinking about times where I've worked for one organization in hospice versus another organization, and at one organization they had certain supplies that they didn't have at the other organization, and when I asked for it, they were like, no, you can't get that. That's too expensive.
Right.
And I'm like, but I know that that's the best one to use, and that's the, like, right. This patient is going to fare so much better. They're going to heal so much faster. And it is frustrating, and it can be very demoralizing, because it almost feels like you are watching somebody suffer unnecessarily. It's like, well, if I just had a wound vac, boy, I'd have this healed up in no time, versus here I am having to do all of these dressing changes, and the patient doesn't have the type of caretaker at home who can change these dressings out regularly when they get soiled. They're in a place where they're consistently getting soiled because maybe they're on the sacrum or something like that. You know, I need to heal this faster, because if I don't get this healed faster, it's going to get infected. And all of this stuff starts to go through your mind. And so knowing that consistency, or that the quality of care, that it's probably impossible, right? The way we currently do things, I think that it's probably not reasonable to expect that every single person is going to get exactly the same type of treatment or care in every single situation, because that's just not the environment that we live in right now. So,
well, I don't think even in the ideal environment that's going to happen, because we have the choice of change. We have the choice of autonomy. And I think it's so important that as wound care nurses, that we don't lose track of the fact that we have to look after the whole patient, the WHOLE. Yes, having this dressing, as you said, negative pressure therapy may improve it. You're absolutely right. But if their nutrition is in the toilet and they're not eating and they're constipated, that their blue eyes are now brown, and they
boy, I haven't heard that one before, but I'm using, I've yes. never heard so, that before, but I'm using it now.
No. Yeah. I always say, we're going to change your eyes back to blue. And people are like, I never had blue eyes, you know, but, so if you're not looking after those other things, that wound is not going to heal. And also being aware, what are their goals in palliative care? They might be at the stage in palliative care, yes, that they have a chronic illness, that their quality of life is going to be different, or their length of life might be different. But at this stage, we're still, you know, full steam ahead, with the caveat that we're working towards realizing that we want to do the best that we can in this situation. And then as they're closer to death or the end of viable options, we may say, our goal isn't healing. So yeah. Why are we putting a $50,000 therapy? Why are we doing that right now?
Yes.
It's so much nicer as clinicians to be able to have our clients come alongside of us and explain that, but when I come in, if I'm the first one who said that, they're going to say no. But if we've started talking about different goals and how the goals change and keeping up to date and looking at all the different factors, then I think our opportunities to be less frustrated are more evident.
Yeah. And you know what? You're bringing up a really good point, too, is that sometimes it's not just one clinician that's providing the wound care, right? It's multiple people coming in. And it's also sometimes it's caregivers that are doing it, like when family members or, you know, caregivers right. that are doing it when you're not there. And so this is where I think the charting, the communication, all of that is that you are communicating well as a care team so mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. And that's a million-dollar question, right? Yeah. As a clinician in the clinics, I would have patients come in and they've had home health care nurses doing it and the family's doing it. And especially I see this with patients who have abdominal fistula and you've got these complex dressings that, you know, you have to hold your tongue a certain way to make sure it sticks. And the patient says everything was working fine in the hospital. Everything was working fine in the outpatient clinic. But, you know, I get home and it doesn't work. And so when I break it down and talk to the home health nurse, they never receive the directions from the hospital. Or the patient has 52 different ostomy pouches at the bedside. Half of the bags don't fit with the wafers. Half of the pouches aren't the right size. It's the same pouch that they had when they had the surgery 52 weeks ago, and now things have changed. So what we did is developed a sheet that actually had everything generically written down so that it didn't matter when they got to the home. Like they could look at their supply list or they could actually go into their local pharmacy or DME and actually get the supplies that they needed that were consistent. Maybe it's not the same brand name, but it's the same style of dressing so that they can actually work towards consistency. The other thing is making sure that the client has those directions and they're also faxed to the upcoming, like the new agency or whatever. And then the client actually takes responsibility. But if you look at what clients go home with,
yeah.
like they go home basically with an encyclopedia of everything from telling them to walk, to talk, to eat. And it's overwhelming. Yep. And even as a patient myself, I've gone home and nobody told me that. And then I found the papers like, and look through it and go, yep. oh my goodness, I did have that information, but who has the time to read it? So I think being very empathetic, Brené Brown, I don't know if any of you have seen that YouTube video about going into the hole.
I love her.
And if we've been blessed with good health or blessed with opportunities that didn't demand creative thinking, we might be blind to some of the situations that our clients are in. And just something easy like reading, they may have very high literacy when it comes to history and wars, but when you start talking about your body, they don't even know that there's three holes down below in a woman. And people like are shocked by that. And instead of being shocked, try to come alongside and in a non-threatening way, how can we make this work? And sending home a video with patients, you yep. know, I so many people have cell phones now and it's okay to say, hey, yep. let's do the video together. And then I want you to go home and watch it and tell me what we missed, right? Yep. And actually giving people pieces of tangible things so that we can stay consistent. And the thing is, what matters most?
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, because when I was doing home health, I used to use video a lot because I wanted them to be able to watch it and rewatch it. And I acknowledge that it's a lot to take in and that they're not going to remember everything that I have to say. And if I don't want to have to get a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's better for me to do the video with them and say, look, just videotape me. Videotape everything I'm doing from start to finish. You can go and rewatch it. Then you're not dealing with like literally literacy issues, you know, where you're not sure whether or not somebody is able to even read the writing.
And also checking in with our clients. And I also like to ask, so what did you hear me say? It keeps me in check because I was like, I did not say that. And, you know, my body language, my verbal language, all the distractions around. So what did you hear me say? Yep. They might have heard you say, especially in a palliative situation, all they heard was, I'm going to die. Whereas I said, you know, you have the X amount of, you have this disease, but people live, you know, how we live is going to be different than if you didn't have this disease. And so asking people to reiterate what you said, then you can fill it in, but asking in a non-threatening way so that patients don't feel intimidated. Again, we want to come alongside somebody and help them. And it's the same with our clinicians. Yeah. You want to gain respect and you want to gain collaboration with people versus being an adversary. And having been on both sides, it's something I've had to learn. I'm a very forthright, in your face, this is how it is. Like, what do you mean you can't do it? And at the same time, even though my clinical practice, I was really up to date, I needed to work on my presentation and was really happy with being told about and able to attend our Community Listens, which is a national U.S. opportunity to improve your listening and speaking skills and how you present yourself and how to handle conflict and all those different things. And it's free.
That's amazing.
Like, it's free. It's a weekend shindig, right? So people say, you know, I don't have the money or whatever, but it's free. And you can do it as a family. You could do it as a community. And like, I think about Charleston, like the people who told me about it, they actually implemented it. And now the city of North Charleston actually has that part of their onboarding and part of their continuous training. So that even though it had nothing to do with nursing in the sense that it's not care, it's part of that professional practice and part of that, how are we communicating with people and how are we as a society, empowering people to be the best person that they can be and have that consistency.
Yeah, sometimes what I have found with patients is that they're very quick to highlight when they hear something different. And then when they hear something different, they immediately mistrust. They lose trust, right, in the clinician. And so sometimes, like, what I used to say to patients in the home was, you're going to receive care from a variety of different clinicians. Okay. We're all going to be a little bit different. We're all going to put our gloves on a little differently. We're all going to kind of set up our space a little bit differently. Sometimes we're going to use slightly different supplies. You might see that this cap looks different than this cap, but one's green and one's orange. It's just a different manufacturer. They do the same thing. And so there's things that you might see, but here's where you should be focused on, okay? Did your clinician walk in and go wash his or her hands? You know, is there a certain attention to hygiene, staying clean, setting up a sterile space to be doing a dressing change that requires some level of sterility, and helping them to understand there are some things that can be different and there are some things that should not be different.
Right. Exactly. And I think giving people that power to realize that there's different things.
Yes.
And that goes back to the goals. So you can have your global goals, but you can have your everyday goals. And so a lot of times patients, you know, get really frustrated. Well, this nurse said that and that tech said that. And so what I'll say is, okay, let's go back. And what are your goals? What are your daily goals? So I want the fistula pouch to stay on for 7 hours, and I want my peri-wound skin to stop hurting. Okay, they don't care about the fistula healing. They don't care about anything else other than keeping the pouch on so that they can go to the movie theater and getting their skin less itchy.
Yeah.
So those are the things that you want to address and say, okay, these are the things that we can change. You know, these are all skin protectors. But if you use a skin protector that has petrolatum in it, it's going to be slidey and you're not going to increase your wear time, right? Because Vaseline, I know we're not supposed to use brand names, but Vaseline decreases your adhesion. So when you've got those goals all in place and write them down so that the people coming after you are also on those goals, and empower the patient to say that. And then you can also say, you know, these are the goals. This is what I think will work. So one of the, like the big one, I always use the example. So the patient will say, well, I use duct tape, you know, to keep it down. I say, okay, great. So you use duct tape. How did that help for your skin breaking down, your second goal? And they're like, well, it hurt. And when I ripped it off, like I took half my abdomen off, but it stayed 7 days. I said, okay, so you got one goal, but that one goal impacted your other goal. So let's think about how can we make this work. Now, duct tape, if that's all you have and it's 8 o'clock at night and you're just exhausted and nobody can come, well, duct tape might be in that situation okay, knowing that you might not have the goal met that you want. So I think also giving people knowledge, and I think knowledge, this is going back to what I said before, a lot of times people hoard their knowledge thinking that if I know this, I will be invaluable. I think that knowledge is power. And the more you know, and the more you're able to share that information, the better off other people will be. And I think there's been a shift a lot to getting knowledge from social media and all these other sources, which may be enough to start getting people to ask the questions, but we always have to go back to where are we getting the information from and how will that impact people? And asking the right questions, right?
Having reliable places and sources, I think especially as we are moving into a time of technology, a certain type of technology, AI and everything like that, is that there's good use cases for all of this stuff, but where that information is getting derived from, pulled from, is all really important because it can be overwhelming for clinicians, patients, family members, anyone to find what is the right information or the trusted information. So the more we can point people in the right direction, I think the better off.
Right. And also giving people tools of how to evaluate that information. So, you know, of course there's good things with social media. There's great things with AI, but how do we evaluate if this is a great one or if this is really detrimental to our care? During our talk at WOW, Joy and I gave a list of resources so that people could go home and look at them. And people are like, oh, I don't have time. Well, as a home health nurse, you know, maybe listening to a podcast in the car, or just give yourself a goal of reading one article during lunch, just once a week. Start small. You don't have to be, you know, reading the whole journal front to back and being on top of everything, but just start small.
That's actually a great use for AI, by the way. If you have something that is like 3 or 4 pages, one of the best uses of AI is distilling down large amounts of information into what are the key takeaways from this article. So that is one of the best ways of using AI. Find a journal, find an article that you're like, I don't have time to read all 5 pages of this, but I'm going to upload it into OpenAI and I'm going to ask it to distill it down to maybe the top 10 takeaways. It's great.
And that's good. But also just to be careful with that. You also want to evaluate, is it taking the top 10 that are important? So before you totally trust completely that you actually read the article and see if the top 10 that you thought is the same as what the programmer for the AI thought was the best. Anyway, it's just another like thing that as nurses, we have to be aware of. And I think that we're a smart group of people. Don't think that we're not. And we have value and we have knowledge. And how are we going to use that effectively with the constraints of our healthcare that we have right now?
So, Lynette, what would be your top three places that you get information from, that you frequent. And that could be a podcast, that could be a website. What are your top three?
Well, being really global, I'd say the top one is societies. I'm a member of the Wound, Ostomy, Continence Nursing Society in the States, and the NSWOC, the Nurses Specializing in Wound, Ostomy, and Continence Care Canada. And first of all, we have the journal through them, and also we have wonderful web pages. And their web pages, they offer so many resources to their members. So I would say that's the first. Obviously, scientific articles and colleagues, but I also check different organizations that I trust. And so for wound care, if you look everywhere in the world, they have best practice. And you're like, well, I'm only in the States. I'm only going to look at the US ones, or I'm only in Europe. I'm only going to look at the European ones. And there's value in that. But also when you're looking at other organizations, they may pick out something that's really important, or they have a different way of viewing it. And that might be also advantageous when you're talking to your colleagues. We're not just nurses talking to nurses. How do I approach this with a podiatrist who's also doing nail care while I'm doing the lower extremity ulcer care? So being aware of what other people are being taught is really important. Also, I do get a lot of information from vendors, which is important, but also because of the information I've gathered from the societies and articles, I'm also able to ask them the questions that matter, because you can, unfortunately, you can say whatever you want. You don't have to back it up. And that can be a problem. So you don't want to take all the information that necessarily. And just to give you an example, so there was a certain type of wound wash that the rep had been very, very, very excellent at promoting. And so the agency wanted to change to that wound wash. Well, they did, but then the price kept going up and up. And so every time that they wanted to use that product, they had to present it to a panel. And the panel had to review the situation and say whether or not they could get that wound wash. Well, it came to find out that when that wound wash was delivered to the home, the nurses checked off one. But when that wound wash had been put onto the formulary, one meant one case. So they were getting 12 or 24 bottles of the wound wash and being charged for that. And we all know that once it gets in the home,
you can't take it out.
It can't be reimbursed, right?
Yeah.
But what was also happening is that case isn't there when the nurses get there. The family puts it in the closet because they just can't deal with it. So the nurses weren't even aware that they had, you know, 23 other bottles.
They just kept ordering
and
more.
And that's why costs were going up. And so assuming and trying to just dig down a little bit, and if we each dig down a little bit in some things, we'll be able to find that information to make things better. So I know that assume always is making an ass out of you and me, and there's so many times that has happened. Yeah. Another example was a patient refused to take pain medicine for his dressing changes. And now, he had been in home health, he had been in the hospital, all these different places, and he refused. Then he was getting his assessment for MAID. So here in Canada, a medical assistance in death or physician-assisted suicide is legal. And so part of it was getting an evaluation. It wasn't till that evaluation, which was 72 hours before that patient died, that it was realized that the reason that he didn't want pain medicine was because he had witnessed his wife and his son have procedures when they were dying in the ICU. And even though they gave pain medicine, it didn't resolve their pain, and that they became delirious. And that was his biggest fear. And it was so awakening in the sense that how did we get through all those different people, all those months and years of therapy, but 72 hours before he died, we figured that out. And what impact would that have changed? You know, was he still going to die? Yes, but would he have died, you know, from natural causes versus medical assistant suicide? I don't know. But I just think it's so important as clinicians that we don't assume, that we ask. And you know what? If we ask 52 times, and I know people get so angry that I just told the doctor that, I've just told the nurse that, because sometimes the next person will figure something out that they didn't figure out the first time. Yeah. And so being patient and kind, and how we ask, and knowing that balance between being a pain in the abdomen and being a pain versus just letting things go.
Yeah.
So it's
communication.
It's huge.
It seems like an easy solution in a way, where it's kind of like, hey, look, you got to just make sure you're talking to each other, that you're talking to your patient, that you're talking to other parts of the care team, that you're not just leaving things to assumption. And that does go a long way in terms of also creating consistency of care. This has really been, I mean, just such an enjoyable conversation to have with you, Lynette.
Oh, good.
I mean, you're just a wealth of information. You've definitely been in so many different situations and environments so that you can speak to each of those, and in a variety of different capacities, whether it's as an advanced practice nurse or as a registered nurse, or, you know, in just a different, various different capacities over decades. It's so beneficial to our audience to be able to hear from someone who has worked in these areas like you have, and also has been a part of associations, professional development, staying up to date on all of the newest types of therapies and types of dressings and supplies and equipment and everything like that. And so I hope for everyone who's listening, if there's a way for people to reach out to you or to connect with you, what's the best way for people to connect with you, Lynette?
So the best way is email, but also be aware that sometimes it takes a little bit for me to get back in touch with people. But my email is Lynette, Lynette.E.Franklin, Franklin. So Lynette.E.Franklin@gmail.com. That's my just generic email. It's best to get me there versus through work or consulting. And obviously, if people can get in touch with you, Kara, and I give permission for you to give information out, I'm also going to send to you, Kara, and maybe you can attach this to this podcast, but the list of WOW, the Buzz report that we did just this past August, because I think it offers a lot of different resources that are evidence-based, that are up to date as of that time. Now, remember, things change, so it's not the be-all and end-all. But, and also, I don't necessarily know. So support your local clinicians. Find out who your wound ostomy continence nurses are. Find out who is specialized. Find out how they practice and keep current. One of the things I loved about being in South Carolina and Atlanta was that we had a very active WOC, wound ostomy continence, presence. I just remember South Carolina, we were at a national meeting and somebody goes, "That's South Carolina." Not realizing that sometimes we were the unwanted stepchild of the nation and we were a little bit backwards, but we were really forward thinking. I just praise those men and women who came before and really put us on the map in terms of wound ostomy continence care. And we actually had practice that was way above what was going on in the nation. And so, but we also got together annually. We had meetings in the Capitol to just, you know, shoot the breeze, get to know each other so that actually we could call them up on the phone and say, "This is what I've got." And also just being available. I've had physicians call me from the OR as our residents had gone to other facilities and said, "Hey, Lynette, remember what that, you know," and I'm like, "Oh." So, you know, having that availability is also important if you can. But if you're an introvert and that's just too exhausting, that's okay. We need everybody to be able to practice and make the group better. And I think when we support each other collaboratively versus competitively, things get better.
Oh my gosh. That's a wonderful closing remark to such an incredible podcast episode. And I'm just so grateful that you shared this much time with me today. And I really, really look forward to sharing all of those resources. We'll definitely have that on the podcast landing page. So for any of you that are listening, if you want to go and find those resources, we'll make sure to list them on the nurse.com/podcast. You'll be able to click on this episode, and then we'll make sure that any of those resources are available. Lynette?
Kara, it's been a real privilege. I hope it's warmer where y'all are. We are having freezing rain right now, and it's in very cold. We're in Celsius, so it seems a lot colder up here than when it's in Fahrenheit, but because we're in the negative numbers. But anyways, I'm not sure when everybody's going to hear this, but that they have a wonderful day and week, and I look forward to working with y'all in the future.
Thank you so much, Lynette. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
If you're a nurse or nursing student that enjoyed this episode, visit us at nurse.com/community, where you can find the Nurse Dot Discussion Group, a place where we dissect each episode in detail and delve deeper into today's topics. Nurse Dot is a Nurse.com original podcast series. Production, music, and sound editing by Dawn Lunsford. Production coordination by Rhea Wade. Additional editing by John Wells. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in to the Nurse Dot podcast. Until next time, keep spreading the love and the care.